There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. Garland upstairs. Oh! Sexton inside! A thunderous dunk!
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers season is officially over. They did not get the 27 wins that I was predicting, but we did get a win for Team Karma Exists as the Oklahoma City Thunder won their final game against a Clippers team that didn't appear to be trying. The Minnesota Timberwolves also won their game, meaning the Cavs and Thunder are splitting the fourth best lottery odds. Both teams will have a 45.1% chance at a top four pick, and they will flip a coin next week to figure out what the order will be if neither team gets selected for a pick in the top four. But we have plenty of time to discuss the Cavs season that was and everything else for the rest of the offseason. But today we're going to discuss the play-in, the playoff picture, and what the Cavs can do to be in this mix next year. With me today to discuss that is my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for play-in season. It's pretty fun to have these games. I think I've been a pretty loud proponent of them from the beginning, especially for those who are worried about tanking. I've always long contended that the worst teams in the league aren't that fun to watch anyway. It's really the middle class that you got to worry about. And I think that the lower middle class, the NBA, really worked their asses off to get here. And it added a lot of intrigue to the late season. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I agree. We are currently counter-programming the start of the play-in games, but unfortunately, it is not probably the least interesting of the play-in games, as Indiana is dealing with a lot of injuries and Charlotte's missing some guys too. But you know what? There's still big picture stuff to talk about when it comes to the play-in. And joining us today is a very special guest making his return to the Chase Down Podcast from basketballnews.com and one half of the Terrific Dunker Spot Podcast, Nikias Duncan. Nikias, how you doing, man?
I am doing pretty well. Thanks for having me. I feel like the last time we were on the pod together, we were talking about Dion Waiters, which feels like forever ago.
I don't know if it was that long ago.
Well,
if it is,
could agree that is forever ago.
Yeah, it's been too long. I think that is the proper conclusion to draw from that. I don't know if it was quite that long unless we are discussing Dion Island with the Miami Heat, but we are really happy to have you back. I want to start things off just talking about the Cavs, as we are a Cavs.
Can I actually start with some shameless promotion of
yeah,
the dunker
absolutely.
Spot?
Take the wheel. Take the wheel.
Because, man, this pod is so good. I think it's really, really hard when you're starting a national podcast to make it worth my while. You know what I mean? Like, it's already a flooded market. There's a lot of people who are doing it. A lot of people with large platforms, you know, the Lopos, the Simmons of the world. So I think any national pod that has become, that can become in my must listen rotation in terms of stuff that makes me feel educated about the league while also entertaining me, it deserves some credit. So I just wanted to really shout out the pod first off, Nick, guys, because it's awesome. And not to put too fine a point on it, but I remember when you were on our pod the first time and you publicly tweeted about how you weren't good on pods right after, and now you're killing it.
I don't know. I still have my days where I feel like I don't really know what I'm doing. Like, this is,
well, you're wrong. You do. You're really good, man.
I appreciate it, man. I'm just doing the best that I can. This is a new venture for me. Really having a blast. It's a blessing to have Steve Jones on with just the experience that he has in the league. I'm learning every week, just like I hope the listeners are. So I'm just having fun talking hoop.
Man, it's so much fun to listen to the podcast. I really do think that it's fantastic. And I can relate. Like, I feel constantly like I have no idea what I'm talking about. And that's why we have to bring on informed people like you to help keep us a little, get us a little more educated, help keep our listeners educated. But moving on to what I was planning on discussing at the start, as Carter throws up the score, as it's 17-7 for the Indiana Pacers. A little bit of a surprise there.
Thank you very much to the NBA's YouTube channel, who just has this lovely little box score stream that I can shout just out steal the and throw right up on the pod.
Yeah, I nice. Don't think we'll be referencing the
shout
the
out
live
our
game.
Parent company.
Yeah. I don't think we'll be referencing the live game too much because that will age very, very poorly. But the question I want to have, so looking at the playoff picture, I find this season to be interesting. Like, everyone knows how weird this year has been and how tough it's been to evaluate. But you look at the Eastern Conference as an example. The Atlanta Hawks and the New York Knicks were two teams that were terrible. They were basically in the same position that the Cavs are in now, last season. They took two different routes. I mean, both teams benefited from internal development, but the Atlanta Hawks made more of a splash when it comes to free agency and kind of fine-tuning the roster to accentuate the young players they have. When you look at those two different approaches and compare it to the Cavs, do you feel like the Cavs are more similar to the Hawks or the Knicks in that they either need to overhaul a lot of the roster or they can bank more on internal development if they want to take the next step next season?
I would say I think they're closer to the Hawks than the Knicks. Like, I do think, at the very least, if you're just looking at it within a can the Cavs get back to the playoffs perspective, like, they already have a backcourt that should be able to score enough to kind of be a pillar of a play-in or a later playoff team in Colin Sexton and Darius Garland. So I think they have that. They have solid role players already. It's just about kind of improving on the margins and just gaining more experience. I don't think they're super far off from making that next step.
Mm-hmm. It's such a tricky thing because I look at the results this year and the quality of kind of the cores of the teams that even missed the play-in. Like, you look at New Orleans, you look at Toronto, you look at all these teams that have really good foundational pieces, and it's intimidating to me. Like, I really like the Cavs young core, but it does feel like the standard is becoming higher and higher even as the kind of playoff picture expands with this play-in tournament. Do you think that the young core is good enough to be the core of a team that makes the play-in, or is more significant tweaks needed to that core? Like, do you think it's more about supporting cast or kind of the meat and potatoes of this roster?
I think in terms of getting to the play-in, I don't think they're far off. If they're healthy, like if Larry Nance Jr. doesn't miss a large portion of the season, then I would not be surprised if they were in there instead of like Indiana or Charlotte or, you know, so I don't think they're there far off there. My question becomes, what is the step they take after that? And that's where I kind of have questions about the core. That's where I get into, what does Colin Sexton and Darius Garland look like on a team that wants to win a playoff round or two? But I think just to get to the step before that, I don't think they need wholesale changes. I think they have a solid backcourt. They have nice young pieces. They have solid role players. They just need to be healthy and continue to gel. They'll make that next tip.
Can I ask you this, Nikias? Because I think if we were at this, if you're a Cavs fan post LeBron, it's, you know, the wins aren't there yet. Excuse Millie. She's going to just be shrieking in the background. You know, if you're the Cavs and maybe you're a bit more of a pessimistic fan, you're worried that you're going to be King's East. You're just going to stay mediocre for, you know, in perpetuity, never bottom out to get the top guys, but never really, you know, even, you know, be in the 10 range and that play-in range. Like, do you feel like this Cavs team is trending in the right direction right now? Like, do you like? How do you feel about their overall arc as a team in this? You know, in, I guess 3 years into this rebuild now.
I am mostly fine with it. Again, like, I think Colin Sexton is good. I think mm-hmm. what we saw from Darius Garland this year, him actually being willing to take shots on purpose, is a big development. I like the Isaac Okoro pick. Again, I love Larry Nance Jr. I like Jared Allen. So they have a solid young core in place. So I do think they're trending the right way. It's just going to be about filling out pieces around there to kind of make the next step. But it's also a little bit hard to ignore Sexton and Garland as a backcourt from a size perspective. And I think if you're going to make that next leap, like, something has to give there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's finding that jumbo creator, like, if they luck out with the lottery again and get a Cade Cunningham and then he's so good that it doesn't matter. Oh,
excuse me.
Hey, now, this has not been a lucky lottery team. I will fight that narrative.
Listen, I don't. Here's a real question regarding that, because it makes me a little crazy, because they've fallen 2 years in a row. The Nets pick was way worse than anyone thought it was going to be. How That's many true. Years of bad fortune until people go, the Cavs are unlucky? Because I feel like
it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
30 years of falling in the lottery. People are like, yeah, but you got all those first round picks back in the 2000s.
You know, that's fair. That's fair. I didn't dig too deep in it. It's just, it's difficult to see a team win number one that many times.
Oh, yeah, we get it.
So, like, that's just kind of what
I'm only mostly joking, but it's funny because, like, no one wants to hear Cavs fans say that they've been unlucky. And, like, the thing I've been kind of setting on this pod as of late is, like, I feel like the first rebuild, they got pretty lucky. Justin will always contend they weren't as lucky as people think because they lost the coin flip for Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel like they got lucky and had bad process. And this time I feel like they're getting pretty unlucky, but most of the choices they're making are pretty sound. I'm curious what you think about that. Do you jive with that?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing from a team building standpoint, and something we talked about on the last podcast when we were talking about a potential Colin Sexton extension, where we kind of both were okay with an extension, but maybe not necessarily. Like, I don't think either of us advocated for him to get the designated rookie extension. I don't think that he's proven enough to be that kind of a player. But one of the interesting things late in the season has been how much better Isaac Okoro is playing as a shooting guard. And I think that has to factor into the decision-making process. Now, obviously, there is time for him to grow both physically as a teenager and as a player, and right. that role can change. But
Justin's sure he's going to be 6'7".
Yeah, I'm speaking it into existence. If I talk about a growth spurt enough, it's going to occur. But I was wondering, as you kind of watch some of the Okoro film later in the season, as he plays more minutes at the shooting guard position, do you think that that's something that long-term might be his best position? Or because he is a wing, but it does seem like he's more of a 2-3 wing rather than like a 3-4-2 type wing.
Okay. I would agree with that. I think I guess in a vacuum is going to depend on the shot. Like, that's going to swing a lot, because you can kind of afford to be a mess spacer as a four and kind of operate as a screener or as a cutter that way. If you're that kind of a threat on as a perimeter position, like if you're at the one or the two, that's a little bit different, a little bit harder to navigate. So I think for him, the shot has to come along, but the strength that he already has, figuratively and literally, he is just an incredibly jacked dude. I think that helps as a driver. You're going to be able to bounce dudes off of you at the two a lot easier than you would at the three or the four.
And that's what we're noticing. And, you know, like, because I was on team, like, I'm not in any hurry. One, I've not been in any hurry to break up Sexland in the first place. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, oh, well, he's not much of a shooter. Like, I'm not in a hurry. But now I'm kind of seeing, it almost feels to me like, because the jumper isn't there, him getting to muscle twos on the way to the rim actually is a better road to success for him as a finisher.
Yeah, and that unlocks everything else, because he's also a good passer. So if he's able to penetrate the paint and kind of force rotations that way, that shines through and he's able to bring more offensive value. Like, I don't think we have to talk much about the defense. You know what he can do there.
Yeah, and even to that end, like, he's not one of these dudes. We talked about it when we had Jackson Frank on, because he kind of talked about the fact that right now Okoro is guarding these bigger wings and getting in the right spot, but they're just still getting their shot off because he's not that 6'7" that Justin's going to will him to be. It's less of a problem when you're chasing around 6'2", 6'3", 6'4" guards. Right. So that does make sense. I am kind of curious, before we kind of move into play, like I don't want to move into play and talk too fast. But I'm also curious because you're saying that eventually you feel like there's going to be a rubber meets the road moment with Sexland as the starting backcourt. And my party line from the beginning has kind of been, listen, I'll worry about those problems when they become untenable. You know, I see why they could be a problem. But right now, I think the team's best road to success is playing their best guys. And that happens to be those two. The lineup data supports it, etc. If you are running the Cavs, are you trying to get out ahead of this? Are you trying to break this up before you kind of it's too late? Or are you kind of more in my camp where it's like, let's just get as good as we can with what we got. And if a better alternative pops up along the way, then we'll take it.
I think I would lean towards the late pivot than the early one, especially since, I mean, he's still, we're talking about Colin Sexton, he's still on the rookie contract. And to your point, like, I would not give him a full max either. And I also don't think that he would warrant that right now. Like, I would have to look at who's going to have cap space 2 years from now, which I don't know how fruitful of endeavor that is. But, like,
And even if you did, he's a restricted free agent, so you can, like, cross that bridge when you come to it.
Yeah, like, that's not a move you have to make now. I will say if the right offer pops up, then sure. Like, I can't remember his name. Is it Evan Dumerall, I want to say?
Dumerall.
There we go. But, yeah, I think he had a tweet talking about what a Sexton for the number five pick would look like. Like, I don't know if I'd say five. But, like, if there was an offer like that that pops up, like if it's a top three pick this year and someone wants to offer three, then sure, you kind of
fit. You're definitely at the point where you got to consider it, because like I do think the fit concerns are there, the downsides are there, but like it's just so hard, you know. And I think when Justin and I actually talked about that very tweet, we went, Justin said this, he said, well, that's one pick too low, you know, this is a four-man draft in tier one and two, and you know, you really start thinking about it then. But like here's what I'm not interested in is if they do decide to move on from Sexton, I'm not trying to pick up someone who's going to be just as frustrating, but is just different, you know, like, like Jonathan Kuminga, like, is he really going to be, is his feel for the game going to be that much better? I don't know about that. So like, you know, I'm not interested to make moves just to make them. If that makes sense, like
because a guy's taller, like he's not as talented of a player, but he's a more conventional fit. Like the biggest thing with Sexton is there needs to be a viable replacement, and there hasn't been that when it comes to the Cavs roster. Like Carter mentioned it before, the lineup data does support that combination is their best bet. Like especially with Okoro sitting at the three. And
by the way, guys, that has nothing to do with their backup point guard situation on here.
Okay, might have a little bit, but it's funny. So, Nikai, you had mentioned earlier on kind of what this season could have been for the Cavs had Larry Nance played more than 35 games, and he maybe was healthy for about 20 of those, but before some of his injury issues started happening. And there's situations like that around the league. Like, so many teams were impacted in different ways this season. Braden Ballin on Twitter yesterday had tweeted out that the Cavs combined to miss 281 games this season due to injury, the third most of any team in the NBA, and 80 games more than average.
And by the way, isn't that crazy given that they had no health and safety protocol absences the whole year as far as I know?
I think it was like five games. I think it was like five games that they had in the protocols. But like they didn't get impacted by that, but they got impacted by injuries. And I've heard this sentiment, Kevin O'Connor mentioned it on our podcast, and other smart basketball people like yourself have mentioned that they're not really factoring this year's results into their playoff predictions. And I was wondering how much you're even factoring this year's results into projecting next season. Obviously, we have to see what changes occur in the offseason, but how accurate is this sample size that we were provided in such a weird year?
I think you just kind of have to look a little deeper, maybe look around the margins. That's why, again, the Garland development is so important. Even shifting Okoro from the three to the two in some spots, just seeing what it looks like. I think those kind of things are important. Just in terms of them finishing at the bottom of the East, like that doesn't really concern me because when they were healthy, they were pretty good. Like in our inaugural episode of the Dunker Spot, we spent the first 10-ish minutes talking about Cleveland and their defense being in the top five somehow, and Larry Nance Jr. being like a defensive player of the year candidate at that point. Obviously, it was earlier in the season, but that's how good and impactful as he was. So I would like to just see this team together. Because, again, I don't think they're far off from being a play-in team, especially looking at the play-in teams that are there right now.
So I was going to ask you, like, outside of, you know, obviously personal growth from all the young kids, because it is a young-ass team. I mean, their entire core is 22 or younger, plus Larry and Kevin Love. What do you think, if there is an external type of player, I'm not asking to name names, but, like, what kind of players do you think this roster needs to kind of take the leap in your eyes to kind of supplement this young internal growth?
I was going to joke and say a backup point guard, but
that's
high on the list.
That's not a joke, man.
They definitely need one of those. I think big picture, I would like them to have a wing initiator. I think Okoro's going to be very good. I don't think he's going to be that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just having a wing that you can run your offense through, that takes some pressure off of Garland, that takes a pressure off of Okoro if he develops at the two, or if you still have Sexton there, you don't have to watch so closely for the passing growth, which he's made some, but he still isn't primary initiator good.
Yeah.
And making those kind of reads. So like having someone that can kind of fill those gaps for you, I think would be the biggest thing they need to fill.
Yeah.
This would be a very good landing spot for Cade Cunningham.
Yeah. Huh? It's funny. Every time we talk about like what the Cavs need, I always feel like such an idiot when I say a big wing, because that's what a big playmaking wing, because that's what everyone needs. Like no one's like, oh, I got too many of them. it's awesome. By the way, the NBA ticker just showed me that Doug McDermott has 16 first quarter points. So I don't know what the hell's going on there. It does make sense. I'm curious what you think about their group of fours though. Kevin Love is there. Larry Nance is there. Both, you know, Kevin Love has obviously had some highly publicized problems as of late. Larry Nance had a really tough year staying healthy, and that's never been a particular strength of his. Do you, like, if you're just looking at the depth chart, you'd say they're fine at the four. They can look elsewhere. But, you know, in practice, that hasn't always been the case. Do you think they need that? They should be looking for, a talent upgrade there? And more simply, do you think they have their long-term starting four on their roster right now?
I would say I think Larry Nance Jr. is absolutely good enough to be their long-term answer at the four.
I agree.
Just the shot improving the way it has helps accentuate the passing that he has and what he can do off ball and what he can do as a lob threat. And then defensively, he's everywhere. Mm-hmm. So like him and Jared Allen together in the front court, that should be the basis of at least a solid defense just because of what Allen can do as a rim protector. Looks a little bit better in space this year. And again, Nance does a little bit of everything. I don't know where Kevin Love fits.
Us either.
Which, I honestly don't know what you do with him. Like, from a financial standpoint, there are very obvious questions there. But even moving forward, like, I think he's certainly at the point now between age and the injuries, like, I think he kind of has to be a five for you. And that works in certain aspects. But again, if you have Garland and Sexton as your backcourt and you have Love as your five, then you're asking a lot of those other two spots to kind of fill that out defensively. And again, that's more long-term thinking. So I think if there's going to be a move there, I think it has to be him.
Yeah.
But I think just from a talent perspective, I think they're fine at the four. Like, I don't think it's a big pressing thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious what you would do with Love if you were the team, because Justin and I just kind of had this, had it out on a recent podcast, because Justin Justin is ready for them to find ways to move off him, whether it is a buyout, whether it is a trade. And I still think he adds a lot of institutional knowledge and, you know, just offensive know-how to a team that doesn't have a lot of great decision-making on it still. I think someone like Cade landing on the roster suddenly, it helps lessen some of my concerns about losing a guy like that. If you were the team, kind of what would your direction be?
I wouldn't want to buy him out.
Me neither.
If I could find a landing spot for him, Like, it's funny, we talked about Sexton earlier, like, don't trade him just for the fit. Mm-hmm. If you're going to move him for something good or something that's really going to help you moving forward. Like, with Love, I would trade him for the fit. Like, that's where you get maybe a more mobile four and you find a solid backup point guard. And if you can get some pick compensation on top of that, by all means, say yes as soon as it's offered.
But barring some major jumps in play next season, I think that ship is has left the harbor. You know, like, yeah. I think that the number is bad. His number and his health was just not good this year again. Mm-hmm. And when you miss three quarters of the season, two out of three seasons, and you're aging, I just think, you know, with the number at where it is, like, I think at best you're getting, you know, a salary dump, you know, mm-hmm. and that's where it's like, you know, I don't like a buyout because it's like, you're going to get $5 million back and then who gives a damn, you know, it doesn't really do much for you. And you just paid a guy to go away. Whereas at least a salary dump, it's like, okay, I see, you know, there is money coming off the books.
Yeah. And it might be multiple players coming back. That might be individually a little easier to move off of and create room down the road.
Oh, and by the way, salary dumps sometimes help. Taurean Prince was really helpful this year. Yeah. And he was a tax.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not anti-moving Love at all, but I was interested to hear what you had to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, and we appreciate your kind of insight on that. And I'm kind of torn. Like, it's the fresh start would be nice, but you also have to do what's responsible, right? Like, you have to weigh all the options, and I think this is certainly a summer for weighing all the options. As we move our focus to the actual playing games and the teams that have achieved that, the question that I have for you, obviously the Lakers are the only team in that mix with real championship aspirations. So I won't include them. Outside of the Lakers, who has the most to lose from this play-in tournament if they were eliminated?
Most to lose? I would say that wouldn't reflect very well on Boston.
Even with
the Jaylen Brown injury, that would not reflect very well on them. And Washington, I think, is the hottest team in the league. What is it, 17-6 over the last 23 or something like that?
Yeah.
I get it with Boston because they've had the injuries. Like, Jason Tatum, as great as he's been, he's had to work through COVID himself. But just from an optics standpoint, you go to the Eastern Conference Finals, you lose Gordon Hayward. There was a lot of weirdness around there. And then you drop to 7 and then lose in the play-in to Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. Like, that just wouldn't look great, especially once you consider – I don't know how much you want to put stock into the chatter around, like, Brad Stevens, but – that would
well, we're Cavs fans, so yeah, we've had a lot of fun at Pat Stevens' expense over the course of our careers.
So, I mean, that would at least be something, even once you add in the context. Like, that wouldn't be a positive for him.
And frankly, all these teams in the East have context. I mean, because the reality is, if they don't make it at all, that means they've lost to either Charlotte or Indy, who have plenty of their own problems. I do think there is a degree of, like, if Indy can't kind of find their way in there, you know, that team has a lot of institutions. Like, we've joked a lot on here, really not even joking, that, you know, after years of chasing titles with LeBron, I'd be really content to be the Pacers for a while if I'm the Cavs. Just a consistently competent team that always makes the most out of who they are. I feel like this is the first year in a long time that hasn't been the case, where they've kind of left me cold. I know they've had injuries, and you don't want to, per what Justin was saying, you don't want to overly read into results this season, but the fact that you're hearing, like, drama coming out of Indy and a coach that doesn't seem to be well liked, like, I don't know, it just feels like they might be trending in the wrong direction, and that might be extra ammo to support that.
Yeah, Indy's a good spot. They'll probably be my number two, honestly, because I mean, with with the way Washington, which is kind of wrecked with COVID earlier this season and wrecked other teams as well, apparently, but
no kidding.
I kind of excuse their slow start, and they've finished the season incredibly strong. Like, if they lose a one-off to Jason Tatum, or if they lose twice, then I don't really care too much about that. Like,
yeah.
I mean, they got hit with injuries too. I mean, they lost their starting center for the year. You know, things weren't.
Look at Bradley Beal. Like, Bradley Beal in the last game of the year did not look good. Like, I'm not. I think it was Mike Sykes that tweeted this out, but it had a sense of dread, like, just filled me, because he pointed out Bradley Beal doesn't look like he should be out there on a basketball court. And if this were to go the direction that John Wall went in Washington, where he tried to play through injuries and everything fell apart from there, like that would be just so tragic. And like, for me, as much as I like jokes and whatnot, like, I'm rooting for teams to do well. I like basketball. I like success. I like seeing talent do well. Right. And I completely agree with you. Like, I think Boston has the most to lose. My gut instinct says that Boston and Washington will end up in the playoffs. They'll come out.
Can I ask a quick Beal question?
Yeah, go ahead.
If he were to have won the scoring title, would that have been the most anonymous scoring title winner in NBA history? Like, the least talked about? Like, nobody thinks about Bradley Beal as like a top 10 type player. And like, normally, like, scoring champ is like kind of special territory in my eyes. Like, people like really make it a big deal. If you're that, you are like cemented as a top guy. It's very different than just like hitting 20, hitting 25. Like, when you're scoring champ territory, I feel like, is he underrated? Like, I don't know what to make of Bradley Beal.
I do think he's generally underrated. I never thought about it within like the scoring title context, though.
Like, he almost won the scoring title, and I feel like I heard his name on like three podcasts all year.
it's usually not like he was a big conversation topic. Usually when he comes up, it's, oh, someone should trade for Bradley Beal. He's such a good player. He should get him out of Washington, even though he seems to be very content with that situation. That's actually really interesting. I hadn't thought of it in that kind of historical context, but...
Yeah, I just don't know what to make of that dude. Like, is he way, way, way better than we all talk about him as? Like, is he closer to a top 15 player than a top, 40 player?
I mean, I definitely think he's closer to top 15 than top 40. I also don't think he's top 15. So that plays into it. Mm. At least for me, when it comes to Bradley Beal, I do kind of wish it's less about wanting him out of Washington and more about wanting him in a situation to where he doesn't have to do everything. And I think that's where Russ helps. And that's kind of the thing I felt from Beal last season, because he put up these scoring numbers and they were pretty efficient, and it was nice to see him make growth as a passer and as a driver, but it was just like, this is just unfair to him at a certain
point. I feel like that is the reason that I think that is probably more than anything the reason the discourse isn't crazy about him. It's like, well, yeah, of course he's putting up those kind of numbers. Look at who he's playing with. I think that's been like almost like, and I don't think even that's a conscious reaction as much as like, that's just how people are like subconsciously processing, like, well, yeah, I guess he would probably need to score 30, wouldn't he? they don't think about it much more than that. But it just seems like a crazy year to have and get no fanfare. Like, I haven't really heard him on a lot of all NBA talks.
That's a good point. I feel like, and Nikias, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I feel like the standard keeps getting raised. When I first started being an NBA fan, you could draft a player, like you could draft a Bradley Beal, and it might take a year or two, but that player alone will get you into the playoffs. And now I look at like Minnesota with Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards playing great, D'Angelo Russell. You got New Orleans with Zion living up to expectations. Brandon Ingram's a former All-Star. Lonzo's great. Like, all these teams.
Last time he listed these players, by the way, Nikias, he included Eric Bledsoe. Like, what are you doing, man? Come on.
I just needed a name. He was listing
all the players that were going to miss the playoffs, and he's like, Bledsoe. I was like, wait a minute.
I intentionally put him in the middle, too, because I wanted that list to like really have some weight. You know, the longer it is, the more emphasis. But I just feel like the standard for playoff teams is getting higher and higher, even though people will look at the record and they'll say, oh, well, they didn't get wins, so it's empty stats. I feel like that calculus needs to change, because I really do feel like the talent level in the NBA, and this might lead into some of the expansion talks that we're seeing right now, I feel like it is as loaded as it's ever been, and the standard keeps getting higher.
Oh, absolutely. Like, this is one of, if not the most talented eras of basketball we've had. So I'm glad that, I mean, it stinks that Beal isn't getting the credit that he deserves in a vacuum, because he's really freaking good.
Yeah.
But I'm also glad that it's more anonymous with him instead of getting like what Devin Booker got in Phoenix.
Mm.
So where people just say, all right, high points, low wins, this doesn't matter, without even looking at what he's done and the fact that he was playing point guard, because who else was playing point guard at that point, and tracking his development from there. So I like that it's more of a middle ground with Bill, but it still kind of speaks to how talented the league is and the fact that he isn't getting the attention he deserves because he's really good.
Yeah, and it probably helps that he was an impactful player in the playoffs a little earlier in his career, not when mm-hmm. he was at this level, but we've seen like him be part of a winning situation, so I do think you get a bit of the benefit of the doubt there. Now, the one question I have is, this is the first year that we're getting the play-in, but it doesn't appear that the play-in's going anywhere. We know that it's probably going to be sticking around for a while. It seems to be a success. We'll see how this plays out. I'm sure the league is happy that its first ever play-in gets a single elimination game between Steph and LeBron. Mm-hmm. That'll be really interesting, even though the loser does get another chance. But it does raise the question of how we are going to talk about teams that lose the play-in tournament. Do we say that they were play-in teams that lost, or do we just write them off as teams that missed the playoffs?
That's a good question.
I'll tell you the answer, but while you think about it, they missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think it's the most fun way to talk about it. I think it's the most fun framing. I think mm-hmm. that there is a lot of hand-wringing, I think, from people who already griped about how many, what a high percentage of NBA teams make the postseason. And it's always been to me with this play-in that the playoff pool didn't expand to 10. It dropped to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting to 6 is so important, and not getting there, landing in the 7 or 8 spot, is now so perilous that you're not guaranteed anything. So as a result, like the stakes are so much higher. And as a result, like, you're in the lottery if you lose in the play-in. To me, that you didn't make the playoffs then.
Okay, that's fair. My initial thought was like, whoever's in that 7-8 bracket, the first team to be in that 7-8 bracket and lose twice, like, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the one that gets you miss the playoffs and you get all the slander that comes with that.
Yeah. God, can you imagine if that happens to the Lakers? Oh, my goodness.
Well, no, I wish I researched this before, but I hadn't even thought of that as a possibility. Do we know if the Lakers pick, because it would join the lottery, if they won the lottery, do they give that pick to the Pelicans? Is that protected at all?
I don't know.
I would love to know that. I would really love to know that. That would be a
let's pull up our real GM while we're here, huh?
That would be a really wild development. But I really do like the idea of just writing them off as teams that miss the playoffs. Like, we love the plan. We talk about the plan, what it takes to get there. But once it's done and the results
are... I'm sorry to say, Justin. Oh, wait. No, it's protected for selections 8 through 30. So, yes.
Oh, my
goodness.
If
that pick wins the lottery...
I love that. That is wild. That would be quite the damn development. But I just love the idea of, after the results are finalized, we then act like the play-in didn't occur. That just, these are the 16 teams that made it, because that mm-hmm. that adds stakes to it. But as we shift our focus from the play-in to the playoffs itself, I would love to know, as we look at this postseason as a whole, what three teams have the most riding on this postseason in your mind? Because obviously there's teams that have been really aggressive. They've been buyers this year. Brooklyn going out, getting Harden. Philly maybe not making the biggest splashes, but they've made some changes. Milwaukee getting Drew Holiday. Utah now at the top of the standings. Who stands out to you as the teams that really have the most riding on this postseason?
Oh, number one is Milwaukee by a mile.
That sounds right. Well, it's weird because you would think that signing Giannis would mean no, everything's fine now, but I do think like your window only lasts so long, and they're pretty pot committed after the holiday trade. That's a good point.
Right. It's Milwaukee, and like, this is obviously a bud thing, because if Milwaukee loses to Miami in the first round after losing to Miami in 5 games in the second round last year, like, Bud might as well not even do the post-game presser after whatever game they lose in. He is absolutely. Yeah. He is done.
Yeah.
If they lose in the first round, it almost doesn't matter how it happens.
He should do like a Bad Boys exit where like the Bad Boy Pistons didn't shake hands, but just walks to the tunnel, packs up his desk, and
just
goes.
Takes off his jacket, just leaves on the on his seat. You know who's just looking through the standings, looking at the bracket, who's sneaky? It actually is a really, really important playoffs for is Phoenix. They actually don't have much longer with Chris Paul being who he is, you know, and they've got. I think they almost have an under-discussed trajectory to me because we don't know yet if what they had in the bubble was fool's gold or not, because they then traded for the guy who is like the greatest floor raiser of his generation or one of them. And then, you know, I still don't know what they are once CP3 starts to finally age, because it's going to come. It just cannot. He's 6 foot nothing, like 47 years old. So, like their window is actually wildly small to me with this core. Like, unless Bridges or Ayton take a big leap, which, you know, you can't rule out, or they find some other avenue to elite talent. Like, I feel like their window is actually small. So, like, while they seem like a kind of a new crash route of the postseason, I don't think they can try this 3-4 years in a row with who they got right now.
That's actually a good point. Like, I don't know what Chris Paul is going to do this summer. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has the player option, and that's obviously a lot of money, but also he is wildly impactful. So it also wouldn't surprise me if he declines that and say, hey, let me get 2 or 3 years at a lower number. Let's lock this in. To your point, I don't think he can keep this up forever. But I also don't consider Phoenix in the class because they have so many younger dudes. I mean, Devin Booker is a foundational piece.
Well, I guess what I'm really asking is, are they a real contender without CP3 being who he is right this very second?
Probably not, but I think the bet there for Phoenix, at least, is as Paul declines, Booker continues to get better, you get a leap from Bridges and or Ayton, and then that kind of makes up the gap for you.
Yeah, I'm just worried that when CP3's decline, I think it might be a snap of the fingers kind of decline, you know, like... Because he's managed to hold on so long that, you know, those undersized guards typically when it's gone, gone, gone. And like, I just feel like, you know, it's just going to be it's going to be one injury and the athleticism just drops off a cliff. So I don't know if they have that luxury of a gentle slope downward for him.
It's and very that simple,
makes
man.
This season interesting to me.
It's very simple. Mikal Bridges becomes Kawhi.
God, he's awesome.
As the resident Mikal Bridges. What was happening in the bubble was Bridges was playing over Oubre, and he elevated him, and he is going to continue to have that Kawhi-like trajectory. I am the biggest Bridges stan out there.
I love Mikal Bridges.
I don't think...
Can you imagine him on Philly?
Oh, my goodness. That would have... Yeah, that would have been pretty damn nice.
Cool Simmons, Green, Bridges... Thibault Embiid lineup, just, you know, no big deal.
I'm not as wild about the Phoenix situation as you are, Carter, because I do think that there's an opportunity after Paul is out of the mix for them to continue to be a good team, kind of like Indy and these other teams that are perennial playoff teams. And then down the road, you might be able to consolidate talent. Like you
just
might.
Well, you better keep your boy Bridget or your boy Booker happy then.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely. Like, absolutely.
That guy's got stars in his eyes.
Yes, but I do think that there's an opportunity, especially as a team that I believe owns all their own picks still. You can do one of those large consolidating of talent type moves that we've seen other teams do when they make that all-in push. So I don't think it's as big of a deal for them. But the team that I actually have number one on my list for teams that have the most riding on this postseason, to me it's Philly. Like I feel like this is the make or break year for Simmons and Embiid. Milwaukee's number two for me, but the fact that they do have Giannis, Drew Holiday, and Chris Middleton all locked up, as disappointing as a loss would be, I do think like if they were to lose in the first round, yeah, Bud's gone. They're going to have to make some changes, but those might be necessary changes, and that core is still likely coming back next year.
Right.
Philly, I feel like this is a blueprint year. Like I feel like this is make or break. That duo is not going to make it beyond the season unless they make a sustained run.
I can definitely see that. Philly was two on my list. I had the Clippers third on my list.
Okay.
Just coming off of that kind of season, a lot of chatter throughout that regular season. You take a 3-1 lead in the second round and then lose to Denver. Well, Denver won that series. Let me not say the Clippers lost it. But to lose in that fashion, you make some changes on the roster. You have a new coach now. You can't have a short run again.
You know what's funny? That is such a good point. I did not even think of the Clippers. Like, I have mentally written them off. Like, I don't know if Kawhi is already packing his bags for South Beach or what the deal is. I just, like, I'm not a big believer in the Clippers. To me, like, the three I had, so it's Philly number one, Milwaukee, and then Utah number three. Because I really do feel like this is going to be the pivotal year for, like, Rudy Gobert conversations and all that, which, like, I copped to today on Twitter, like, a lot of the Gobert like hate that I'll get it's just about the dialogue around him. Like, I recognize how good he is as a player, but in a year where they've been as healthy as they are, when they've been as good as they are, the fact that, like, if they were a first round out or a second round out, like, I feel like that would be a massive disappointment, and they'd have to take a really long look in the mirror, because similar to Chris Paul in Phoenix, Mike Conley's not getting any younger, and their window really is now.
I definitely see that. I will just pose this question to the both of you. Where are you at on Dallas?
I think Dallas would be a great landing spot for Kawhi if he does have his bags packed.
I mean, like, within this context, like, do they have anything pressing? Because, I mean, they have Luka in tow, but
I think Luka's the kind of dude who's going to stick around in Dallas. I don't think he's got a guy that's going to be moving on. So I don't think their urgency is as high. I do think there is a degree of, like, we all kind of know the KP thing isn't working out.
Yeah.
And what does that mean about their team building? But, like, I don't think anyone's coming in with this idea of, like, they got to win now, because we know they have this uber generational 21-year-old. And, like, I don't know if the other teams have, like they have a super duper star.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of these teams that we're talking about, like the Utahs, the Phoenixes, they have a bunch of superstars right now. And I just think there's a different level of fretting. Because it's like, you kind of, like, this Utah team might never be better than what they are right now. So It's like, to me, I agree with Justin where it's like, you got, like, you know, now. If it's going to happen, get it in a weird season when everything's trending just right. You're getting the best play out of Mike Conley. You're probably going to get Mitchell's on the upswing. Gobert's on the upswing still. You know, there is a point of, like, this could get stale quick. So, like, whereas, like, Dallas, I don't think anyone thinks this is the best they're going to be.
Yeah,
like,
that's a good point.
If the Mavs don't screw up, that is, obviously. Like, and you could call the KP thing a screw up right now. So, like, I just feel like no one sees title for them as a possibility. Whereas, I think if things break right for Utah, they can win the title. I think if things break right for Phoenix, they can win the title. I think it's a really uphill road. But I can see it. Whereas Dallas, I'm like, I just don't see it with that roster as it currently is constituted.
Do you think Utah and Phoenix can win a title? Because
I think like eight teams can win a title this year. I think it is wide open, my friend.
It is a really open field, and like, I respect the individual talent that those teams have, but I'm just not sold. Like, I can't picture them winning a championship. I'd love to see a new team win a title, or a team that hasn't won recently. I'm just not there. Do you think that they have a legitimate shot at a championship this year?
Can I take it wider, actually, Nikias, and ask you how many teams can win a championship?
Let me pull up the standings.
And I want you to name them off, obviously.
While I'm pulling this up, I was going to say I'm probably a step behind Carter, in which I would not be surprised at all if either Phoenix or Utah made the finals. I think if those two made the finals, they're losing to whoever comes out the East.
They are food. That is
I think making the finals in this year means you got a chance, a legitimate chance.
That's fair.
I don't think anyone's going to be like 6-1 dogs to win the title once they make the finals.
There might be a 2019 type possibility there. Like, I think
going weird year. Anyway, you're ready, Nikias. I'm sorry. Throwing a lot of random shit at you.
Oh, no, no problem. So teams that I could see winning a title this year, I have Milwaukee, I have Brooklyn, I have Philly. I could see it for the Clippers. I could see it for the Lakers. That would probably be my five in terms of winning it.
Do you think there's any chance that both that the Lakers could not make it out of the first round?
Is there a I think there's a chance just because their offense has been wonky all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And the shooting has been kind of off all year long. And that's with LeBron and AD healthy. The offense just hasn't been at a high level. So I could absolutely see if they lose the Golden State and then win the second game, they get Utah in the first round. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Utah bombs away from three.
Yeah.
And they're able to get that. And they're able to get that series.
I would be a little shocked, but I just think here's the reason I have all these teams in the West here is that I'm worried LeBron is not going to be right. I think that people are assuming much too much there. I think the last two times he's had major injuries, both in 2019 with the, I believe it was the groin injury, he didn't come back looking right, though that season was lost, so it's kind of hard to know. And then this year, he comes back and then immediately checks himself back out for a couple more games. I'm worried that old age LeBron doesn't recover quite the way we're used to, and they haven't had the reps. And then at that point, I think you guys are overrating the top of the East just a smidge. I you know I'm a big Brooklyn believer, Justin, if all three guys are healthy. But you look at these point different, plus 5.5, plus 4.5, plus 5.9. We're not talking about juggernauts here. Like, you really think if Milwaukee makes the finals, they will wash Phoenix? They will wash Utah? I just don't see it.
I just think, again, I don't trust season-long stats with any of these teams.
I see some beatable-ass teams up there. I think they're great, but they're definitely have defined weaknesses, all three.
I think the winner's coming out of the East this year. I really do think whoever wins the East is going to win the championship this year. I share your concern with LeBron. I think father time has come up, caught up to him a little bit here, and it's going to take some time for him to get healthy and hopefully be back next season. But my goodness, if I was Phoenix or Utah coming off of this season and one of those teams has to play the Lakers in the first round, likely, like, I would be yelling at the basketball gods right now. Like, that is just, that is such a,
that's cruel.
Like, could you imagine Lakers versus Jazz? Like, you mentioned that Nikias as a possibility, like the loser of that series is going to hear about it forever.
Yes.
Gonna be a lot of
which
fun.
Makes for some fun on Twitter, especially between those two fan bases in particular.
The
two prickly groups, one could say.
Yeah, just maybe a smidge. The one team that we haven't talked about that I just want to touch on before we wrap this thing up, we want to be mindful of your time here, Denver Nuggets. If Jamal Murray was in the mix, do you think that they would have had a shot at championship this year? And
absolutely.
How far do you think they can go now?
I think they absolutely could make a fine. They could win a title this year if Jamal Murray was healthy. So it just thinks that he's out. For now, just trying to eyeball the bracket real quick. They have the 3-6 with Portland, which means
I'll weigh in on this while you look at it. I think I don't think they can win the title. I think they can beat anybody in the West in one series, even currently constituted. I think all these teams are weird and wonky. They have the MVP. They have MPJ, who is going bananas in his kind of rightful, you know, his more natural role, with Murray out. I don't think they missed the scoring as much as I thought they were going to. And I just think anyone can, like, the fact that they got the best crunch time weapon in the NBA has to mean something, right? Like, they just got to hang. As long as they don't get blown off the floor and as long as their role players hit their open threes that Jokic is going to generate for them, I don't see any team just wiping the floor with them.
That's fair. Like, I think just eyeballing it right now, they probably beat Portland in the first round.
No, they better. Portland's
and I think they beat Portland and then they get the winner of the 2-7. So they're probably a second round out for me. Like, assuming the Lakers beat the Warriors.
Yeah,
then it's between Phoenix and LA. Like, I think I like them a little bit more than Denver.
They're probably keeping a really close eye on that play-in. What if the Lakers?
Yeah, what if the Warriors won?
Ooh, if the Warriors win, then I think there's a Western Conference Finals path for Denver.
Yeah, I think they can beat Phoenix. I don't know if I'll pick them against anyone except Portland, because I think Portland is not good. But I just think the odds had better not be too long, or I'll make some considerations, if you know what I'm saying.
I got you.
Carter, you absolute degenerate. You shared earlier this week the clip of Dirk in the 2011 playoffs.
Guys, did you see that?
I did not.
Someone posted Dirk's 48-point game against OKC when he went like 12 of 14 from the field, and he went 24 of 24 from the line. So it was like the most efficient 48-point game I've ever seen. At one point, Breen's on the call. Tabo Cephalosha is getting posted up, and he goes, "Tabo, trying his best." That's the best call I've heard.
My point was going to be that I think Jokic needs to have a 2011 Dirk run. Like, I would love to see that. I would love to see him go into complete takeover mode, because one of the things people forget about that 2011 Mavericks team was they were missing Caron Butler, who was he was a really important part of that piece or that team. And Dirk just went to another level. And with this being such an open field, I can't wait to see who elevates to that level, because obviously Brooklyn is kind of your star power team, and you got a lot of teams that do have really good cores. But I love this open field. I love the chaos of this season. Even though I don't think it's necessarily the best representation of who the best team is, I really can't wait to find out who the best team is right now.
Oh, I'm absolutely excited for it. Like, to your point, I mean, there are a lot of teams that could make deep runs. Like, I don't think there's a single team outside of the play-in teams in the East, I'll say. Like, there isn't a team that I would look at and say, there was 0% chance that this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I could make a case for everyone making the case. Like, even Dallas, Luka is that kind of transformative talent, to where if he has the step back going, he can make any pass you need him to. You can't trap him. You can't really switch against him if he has the step back going. Like, he can just win you games with offense. Yeah. And if you get just enough from the role players, like, they could absolutely be dangerous. But I don't know. I'm ready for some good basketball, man. I'm excited. But
before you go, who's making the finals? Who's winning the finals?
Ooh.
I think right now I have Bucks Clippers.
Ooh.
Whoa. Hold on. Talk about that more. No one has Bucks Clippers.
We were going to wrap up there, but no one has a little bit of elaboration.
I have Bucks Clippers right now. As I look through the rest of the West, I mean, again, there are questions about a little bit of everyone, but I have fewer questions about the Clippers right now, especially with how they've played post All-Star break, like getting this aggressive version of Paul George, getting Kawhi back. He's been incredible all year long. The depth is there. Rajon Rondo has completely proven me wrong for what he adds to them offensively. Just gives them another dimension as a guy that can actually hit guys on cuts. Mm. And that kind of injects a little bit of unpredictability into their offense. And I was worried about their crunch time offense all year. That was the thing that was kind of keeping me back. If he can help them just get a little bit of extra in crunch time, then the Clippers have the talent.
I do think they're the forgotten team of this season. I think everyone had so much fun at their expense, probably rightfully so, but that they've kind of forgot that they were kind of the odds-on favorite for a big stretch of last season, where it was like, yeah, the Clippers are like, you know, they're a little messy, but once they get in there, they're going to kill everyone. Like, that was the vibe. Mm. And I don't think that should have changed as much as it did. I think they should have been dinged. I feel like they've been cratered, like, to like a tier two team in the West. And I really think that they are specifically built to give the Lakers problems.
Yeah. I've got a little more love in my heart for them now, given that loss to the Thunder.
And Ty, come on, man.
Yeah, well, I was just about to get to Ty Lue. Like, it would be great to see them have success. It would be great to see Ty have success. I don't really like the Clippers a whole lot. I don't know what happened there. Like, there's no real reason for me to dislike the Clippers. They gave us the pick that became Kyrie. Ty Lue is there. They got players individually alike. I think it's just because they're the Clippers. But you know what?
Well, no, I'll tell you exactly what it is. And I said it when the whole team came together. It's and Nikias, as a 2K player, you'll know this. It's when you've played a MyNBA mode for like 6 years, and you just look at your roster and it's like, what the hell even happened here? It's just like, like all my moves seem to make sense at the time, but I just, this just doesn't feel right. There's gross. Just something wrong about that roster that feels very inorganic. Like, you know, like when you feel like you've kind of gamed the game system a little too much, and just like you maybe took that one signing that you know you wouldn't get in real life, but it happened. Mm. Like,
oh, I take all those. I take all those,
Justin,
Carter.
We're well aware of your shoddy 2K philosophy.
Listen, man, Rudy Gay was killing it for the Cavs as a four. That was such a nice option
God.
For me.
Point is, cheap. They're just a little inorganic top to bottom, and I think that's why nobody likes them. Also, they're annoying.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, I'm really excited for this playoffs. Like, I think this is going to be such a fascinating year. And the dunker spot is going to be a massive
part of
how I consume this coverage and consume these playoffs. Nikias, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you guys are checking out basketballnews.com and supporting him, subscribing to the dunker spot. Do you have anything else you'd like to plug before we wrap this thing up?
Nothing else. Just written work at basketballnews.com. The dunker spot. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast.
Is the cadence changing at all for the playoffs out of curiosity? Are you staying twice a week?
We are going twice. We have another episode coming later this week. Still decided between Thursday and Friday, but we will be previewing the rest of the series. I think we went over the play-in, and then we went over the Hawks series and also the Bucks series.
Yes. Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to that, man. Thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate your time. Make sure you guys are supporting the Dunker Spot wherever you listen to this podcast. You can find it there. Go do that. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe, as that's the best way to help this show show up in the algorithms. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cats.